friends.
I'm Katie.
And I'm Olivia.
And we are Podcast by Proxy, Canadian True Crime.
Welcome. We're live.
Okay.
Okay. Good morning.
We just kept doing that before we hit record. We don't know why.
Okay.
Things happen. It's early.
They really do. I have a really long case today, and we've done a lot of chit-chatting the last couple of weeks.
Let's deep dive right into it.
Do we have anything to go over before we get into today's case?
No.
Yeah, I don't think I do. I've just been like...
I don't believe so.
...living in this case for the past week, so that's really
I mean, we're 7 days into the new year. Happy New Year, everybody, again. But, yeah.
Yeah, today is day 7.
We're a week in.
I'm still live, laugh, loving my very mediocre New Year's goals. And
same.
Yeah, thriving.
Yeah, playing a lot of Animal Crossing still. So
that's I did start that social media detox book that you got me, though, and I really like it. I'm going to start that tomorrow. So you do, like... one day of tracking your social media usage and kind of like reflecting on your social media usage, and then 2 days of like tapering off your social media usage. So like day two is down to 50% of your regular usage. Day three is down to 75% of your regular usage. And then day 4 to 10 is absolutely no social media. So that should be interesting.
Yeah.
And then you kind of like journal your experience. And then after day 10, you kind of like re-enter social media how you want to show up.
Build a healthy relationship back with it kind of thing.
Right. Yeah. And I mean, I've been working on that for a long time anyway, but I think it'll be really interesting to do like 7 whole days of absolutely no social media.
Well, and you really like a journal or a book or a tracker. So it'll be interesting to see what your overall like headspaces after the 10 days too.
I do love a journal.
You do love a journal.
Anyway, so that's it
for
me.
This bitch likes to keep track.
The other thing I wanted to say, we talked at the end of last episode about like Gypsy Rose and how she's been released. And now I just can't go on my phone without seeing Gypsy Rose.
Yeah.
So
sorry.
At least I'll have 7 days of a break without the
I saw the most recent thing is that she wants Millie Bobby Brown to play her in an adaptation movie of her life. It's like, there's already been a lot of movie adaptations of your life.
Did you see that the Vile Files did an interview with her that's going to be coming out? Like Nick Vial from...
I'm not shocked.
The previous Bachelor World. I know, I'm not shocked either, but I was like, oh my gosh, this girl is everywhere. Good for her.
Yeah, because he was like a Bachelorette contestant, a Bachelorette contestant. A bachelor, and then like Bachelor in Paradise, Bachelor in Paradise, Bachelor in Paradise.
Well, yeah, now he's had this podcast of his for a long time, and it's quite successful, and like he does interviews and things like
he's
that.
He's engaged, he's about to have a baby, like good for him.
Yeah, living his best life, but yeah, he did the damn thing finally. He's interviewing Gypsy Rose, that's, I guess, not that shocking.
No, I think she's really going to be making her rounds, because she seems to, like... she wants Millie Bobby Brown to play her. She wants to talk prison reform with Kim Kardashian. She is, like, hanging out at football games trying to meet Taylor Swift. Like, she's just...
but also talking a lot about her sex life with her husband, which, like, I just don't really need to hear
about. Don't need to know that.
I don't need it. No. No, I agree. Well, today we are... well, actually, before we start... if you don't already, make sure you follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Podcast by Proxy. Send us a Gmail... if you have a case suggestion or for any other reason, and leave us a 5-star rating and review wherever you're listening. I actually noticed recently, and this is only because somebody emailed us a case suggestion that they said that they had put on the Google Doc, that people have been using our Google Doc.
What? We do not get notifications when something gets edited on that.
We don't. And when we first started the podcast, like, well, 3 years ago now, we created that Google Doc for case suggestions and nobody ever used it. So, like, I rarely check it for that reason, because people just never really used it. They would email us instead. And so it was kind of like, whatever, but we left it up. So we had
as I go to check it.
We had a case suggestion recently, and the person said that they had put it on our Google Doc, and so I checked the Google Doc. There are so many case suggestions on there, so we're stocked up for a while.
Guys.
I mean, continue to send them in. We love it. It keeps us going for sure. But I was just, like, really surprised at how many were on there that I had not seen. So we have got content for days, weeks, and months at this point.
Yeah.
It's great.
I'm just reading the little quick things. Oh, my God. One's in my town where I live. Oh, I do know this case, actually. I actually know that case. Actually, the person they're suggesting, who was the victim, I went to high school with the mother of his children.
Oh, wow. Well, stay tuned. Maybe Katie will cover that. We don't know what it is, but perhaps we'll hear about it soon.
Yeah.
Today, though, we are headed back to Ontario. And actually, I think I mentioned this either on Instagram or maybe on the show that I took a really, like, hot break from Crime Junkie for a while.
Yeah, you were saying that last week.
Okay, yeah, for like a good year, maybe more. And so I've had a lot to catch up on. And this case was covered by Crime Junkie like a while ago now, but it really piqued my interest as a Canadian missing persons case. And so, of course, I deep dove right into it and found out a lot. So we got kind of a long one today, but we are talking about the disappearance of Christina Kaleka.
Okay.
On August 6, 2007, 20-year-old Christina Kaleka was camping with friends when she headed out for a morning run at about 6:30 a.m. When she didn't return, her friends had hoped that she just needed some alone time to explore, but a few hours later, they began to panic. 16 years later, Christina's friends and family are still looking for the answer to what happened to her that day in Rainbow Falls Provincial Park.
I'm sorry, how old was she?
20.
20, okay. Yeah.
Christina...
Yeah, doing such a normal thing, going for a run.
Yeah, and we find out later that she had gone for a run with one of the friends that she was with, and we'll kind of get into that, but yeah.
Okay.
So Christina Kaleka was born on December 19th, 1986, to Elizabeth Rutledge and Mario Kaleka, who divorced when she was only a year old. Christina was a Filipino-Canadian. Her mother, Elizabeth, had immigrated to Canada in 1980 from Mindanao in the Philippines. She had one sibling, a younger brother named Michael, who was 5 years younger than her. Christina was raised a devout Catholic, and according to her mother, she had started praying at the age of one.
Whoa, okay.
Christina graduated in 2006 from George Brown College with a certificate in early childhood education. In the summer of 2007, she was living in the Cabbage Town neighborhood of Toronto with her mother and her brother Michael. She was the leader in what's known as Youth for Christ, as well as she volunteered with a youth ministry. She also had a full-time job working at a Catholic daycare known as St. Bernadette's Daycare, which was located beside Darcy McKee Catholic Secondary School.
For a second, I thought you were going to say, like, Darcy McKee Pub or something.
No.
Because we have one like that here, and it just immediately sent me to Pub.
Oh, no. Her friends and family said that Christina was helping her single mother pay the mortgage. So with her money that she was making at the daycare, she was actually helping out her mom. And her goal was to eventually do missionary work in the Philippines before returning to university and becoming a teacher. So she had plans for her life. She had things that she wanted to do. She was described by her friends and family as selfless, caring, and a natural leader. On the first weekend of August 2007, 20-year-old Christina, her cousin, Faith, and her two friends from the Youth for Christ group, Eddie and JB, decided to head out for a camping trip together. Now, it was said that they were originally supposed to go to Montreal, and I'm not really sure why, but they didn't end up going to Montreal, but they didn't really tell anybody. Like, they just sort of figured out that
it was... So everyone thought they were on this trip, but they really didn't go on it, but they didn't tell people it was canceled?
Correct. They were supposed to go to Montreal, but it ends up being that it was, like, too expensive or something to stay there. And so they just kind of, like, pivot their trip, but they don't tell anybody because it's kind of last minute. And we'll get into that.
It is very expensive to stay there.
Yeah. And they're 20. Like, Faith and Eddie... We're both 20 years old as well, so we have three 20-year-olds, and JB was 19.
Also, quick note, can I just say something? Because mm-hmm. we're talking about Montreal. When we were visiting, we tried really hard to book it, but we did it too last minute. You can stay in an old, reformed prison, and it's beautiful. And part of it is that the people there, like, take you around, and you do tours, and you get to hear all the stories about the prison and talk to people who used to work there.
That is cool that you can stay there.
Yeah, you stay in a cell.
That's, I don't know.
But, like, they're turned into, like, hostel rooms. And it's gorgeous. It's so freaking beautiful.
I was going to say, I feel like that's a bit creepy, but at the same time, I would do it.
Stunning.
I would do it.
We'll post the link.
Yeah. Yeah, so we have three 20-year-olds. Like, Faith and Eddie were both 20. JB was 19. So we have a 19-year-old and three 20-year-olds. Not super uncommon, I don't think, to kind of, like, change your plans and just, you know, do something else.
No, not that age.
The group was originally going to take Eddie's car on the trip, but Christina's mom decided to loan them her car instead, since Eddie's car was, like, not super reliable. She didn't want them to get stranded. So the group left on Saturday, August 4th, 2007, to make the 14-hour drive from Toronto, where they lived, to the campground at Rainbow Falls Provincial Park.
Okay.
Rainbow Falls Provincial Park is located in northwestern Ontario on the north shore of Lake Superior and about 200 kilometers east of Thunder Bay, or a 2.5-hour drive from Thunder Bay. The campground is located between two small towns, Schreiber and Rossport, and it's, like, right off the Trans-Canada Highway 17.
I was going to say, we drove past Rossport.
Okay, so you probably would have driven past...
I believe. That's the only one that sounded familiar. Yeah, because we drove past Thunder Bay and kept going up and along, so... Okay.
And it seems like in this campground as well, there's, like, two separate campsites. There's White Sand Lake Campgrounds, and then on the other side of the highway, there's Rossport Campground. So it's kind of split between these two different campgrounds inside of this provincial park by the highway.
Okay. Makes sense.
The group stopped along the way a few times to sightsee and, like, take naps in the car. Again, it's a 14-hour drive. They eventually get to a town. They get to Schreiber, which is about 10 minutes outside the campground, on Sunday, August the 5th. And they stop for groceries before arriving at the campground at around noon. So the group was staying at the White Sand campground side, not the Rossport campground side, which is, like, quite a bit of a smaller campground.
Okay.
They all sign in at the gatehouse and they go to the campsite assigned to them, but they ended up, like, asking to switch sites. Cause I think their campsite was, like, a little bit too close to the road, too close to other people. They wanted a more, like, private, off the beaten path type of, like, campsite. And
they
want to
party a little bit and be loud, like they're young.
Yeah, yeah. So they get a new site, they settle into site number 88, and they got to setting up their tent. The group hangs around the fire at the campsite, but they are exhausted from this trip that they've taken. And so at 6:30 p.m., they all decide to, like, lay down for a 30-minute power nap.
Love that for them.
Katie loves naps and can do a 30-minute power nap. I cannot. Like, if I'm going to nap, it's, like, at 6:30 p.m., if I'm napping, I'm done for the night kind of thing. And, well, apparently this group was similar.
I had a nap at 4:30 yesterday.
Yeah, it's, like, wild to me. You'll just be like, yeah, I'm just having a quick nap.
And then I went to bed
nap.
At, like, 10.
Can't do it. It's not, yeah. It's...
Got up, went out, ran errands, came home, ate dinner, went to bed.
I love that for you. I always tell people that I have a friend who was really good at napping. Because it really is a skill. Like, there are so many of us that, like, I can't go to sleep for 30 minutes because I will wake up so groggy and, yeah.
You run the risk.
You really do. Apparently, this group could not power nap either, though, because they end up waking up at, like, 10:30 p.m. super groggy. And so it's dark. None of them really want to explore at this point. So they just got up and hung around the fire. They ate some food. They had some drinks.
Camping things.
They do camping things.
They do camping things.
Yeah. The group stays up talking until, like, 3 a.m. And this is when Christina, Faith, and JB decide they want to go to bed. And Eddie goes to take a shower. Eddie says when he returned back to the tent, only Christina was awake, and they chatted for a bit, and then both drifted off to sleep at around 4 a.m.
My God, do you know, remember those nights when you're really young and you go camping and you just stay up sitting talking until, like, God knows what time?
Yes.
Oh my God, this frog in my throat.
Yeah, so the next morning, Christina and Eddie both get up at around, like, 6:30 a.m., so they sleep for, like, 2.5 hours, and then they both get up.
Okay.
Christina had apparently asked Eddie if he wanted to go for a run around the campground. Christina wasn't really, like, a big runner, but Eddie was a runner, and Christina, like, kind of wanted to go see the campground and explore. So they both decide to go for a run together, but by the time they reach the gatehouse, they kind of decided to go in opposite directions. I think Christina figured by this point, like, she wasn't going to be able to keep up to Eddie, and he wanted to do, like, a full loop up to the highway and, like, around the two campsites.
So he's just a more experienced runner and wanted to do a longer run.
He was, like, actually going for a run, and she just wanted to, like, sightsee and explore. So she decides to take the trails, which is kind of, like, the opposite direction. And he decides to go up to the highway and, like, do a full loop around.
Okay. Of a run. Yeah. That actually makes perfect sense. When you first told me last week that it was about a case where two people, like, separate and when something happens to one, I was like, sketchy. But that actually makes a lot more sense.
Yeah, I mean, there was, like, all these trails that lead to, like, a waterfall in the park, and it was, like, very scenic. So she decides to split off and take the trails. He goes for a run, and they'll just, like, we'll meet up later. They don't make a time to meet up. I think it was just kind of assumed that, like, we'll just go our separate ways, and I'll see you at the campsite kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
So 9:30 a.m. that morning, Christina's cousin Faith wakes up and sees only JB beside her. They were in, like, this one big tent with the four of them.
That sounds miserable.
When she gets out of the tent, she sees Eddie sitting alone, but not Christina. So JB and Faith ask Eddie, like, where's Christina? And he says that he wasn't sure and tells them about how the two of them had gotten up early at around 6:30 to go for a run. He tells them that he wanted to go up to the highway and loop around while Christina wanted to take it easy and go see some trails and sightsee. And so they had gone their separate ways and didn't really make a time to meet back up. So Faith doesn't seem too concerned that Christina wasn't back yet at this point. She had mentioned to the group that Christina had wanted some alone time, and so she was probably just, like, hanging out by one of the beaches.
I was going to say, I could totally picture you or I camping and being like, I need, like, an hour to myself and just going to sit at the beach.
An hour, yes, but at this point she would have been gone for, like, 3 hours because they left their run at 6:30.
Yeah.
Because I agree that I have done that, but I usually will come back by, like, at least 8:30 knowing that my friends are going to, like, be starting to get up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, me too. Like, I get up at 6, I go do my own thing quiet, very, very quietly for a bit.
Yeah, like, I've had it where I've gone camping and we've had to do, like, a podcast meeting in the morning. So I've taken off, gone to the beach, taken a really early morning call.
Yeah.
But then I always come back by, like, you know, 8:30, 9 o'clock, knowing that everyone's going to be getting up and we're going to be starting to have breakfast and stuff.
Well, and you have your phone with you. You could still communicate where you are if someone was worried. So, like, there's a lot of things, but...
So the group decides to just go about their morning. They start making breakfast. But by 11 o'clock, Christina has still not returned from her run, walk,
adventure. We're getting into, like, a good part of the day gone now. Correct. Yeah, that's like almost half the day if you're going to bed early.
Yeah, I mean, it's a good time. Like, she would have known that they would have been, like, making breakfast and stuff, right? So.
Well, and that would be the time that if they're going to leave the campsite to go do an activity or do something as a group, that would probably be about the time they'd leave. So you'd want to meet up with them.
Yeah. So they had still not thought that much about it until then. But by 11, when she still isn't back, this is kind of when the group starts to really get worried and starts looking for her.
Mm-hmm.
JB goes to have a shower after breakfast and stopped by one of the beaches close to the campsite to see if he could see Christina, but she wasn't there. Eddie and JB also decide to go out and search the trails where Christina was supposed to have, like, gone walking, and Faith stayed back just in case Christina happened to come back. Mm-hmm. But they still come up empty in this search. By 1:45 p.m., they still had no idea where Christina was, and this is when the group decides to get in their car and head to the other side of the campground to see if, like, maybe she had gotten lost. Because there is quite a few trails and things that, like, loop around. So they're like, okay, maybe she got lost. We'll go for a drive. We'll see if we can go find her on the other side.
Or what if she got hurt over there? Like, maybe she's not lost, but maybe she tripped and fell or something. So totally. Good on them.
So they leave Christina a note at the campsite in case she decides to, like, in case she returned and they weren't there.
Mm-hmm.
They stop at the gatehouse on their way to ask for a trail map and to get directions. And the gate attendant, like, must have noticed something was off with them because he actually asked if they were okay. And so they tell the gate attendant that they're looking for their friend and that they want to potentially check a trail that leads into town. But the gate attendant tells them that he doesn't think she would have walked that entire way.
Mm-hmm. Because didn't you say it's like a 10-minute drive?
Well, so, yeah. That's a long walk. Yeah, exactly. It's like an 11-kilometer walk on this trail that goes to town. And so it's pretty far. Like, I think the gate attendant is just saying, I guess, at a certain point, I think she would have realized that she's, like, lost or going too far and turned around.
Well, especially if it's a trail. Like, that's tough terrain, too. That's, like, it just seems like a long walk. It's too much.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it is a really long walk. And I think that's why he was like, I don't think so.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So a little bit more about Rainbow Falls itself. This is a pretty large provincial park spanning more than 1,400 acres. And like I said, it's spread out into two different campsites and split by the Trans-Canada Highway. This trail that we're talking about that leads into town is approximately 11 kilometers, which is a pretty long walk if you were to take it. Like, an 11-kilometer walk is, like, probably an hour and 15 minutes.
Yeah.
So that's pretty...
Maybe even a bit more.
Yeah, depending on, like, how fast you walk, it's pretty far.
Yeah.
Christina was actually not the first person to go missing in Rainbow Falls either. 6 years prior to this, a woman in her 70s got lost in the park for 9 hours before she was found. And even the park superintendent had gotten lost before in the park for several hours. The brush around the trails is quite thick. And so if you went off the main trail at all, it would be pretty easy to get lost.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think of, like, when we watched one season of Alone, it's in Northern Ontario, and the brush is so dense that if you get, like, on the other side of a big chunk of it, your viewpoint is totally different.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, like, it was, yeah, it's very thick.
I could imagine it's really easy. Yeah.
Difficult terrain once you get in there.
Yeah, it's easy to get lost, I could imagine. I should stop laughing.
So at that point, the gate worker tells them that they should call 911 and file a missing persons report. I think that they had...
Well, if other people, like, have gone missing, why not get the resources out there?
100%. And I think at this point, they're like, you know, she's been missing since 6:30 this morning. It's now, like, almost 2 p.m. He's like, okay, you guys need to, like, call 911. You need to file a missing persons report. Don't try and do this by
yourself.
She's
been missing a whole work day now. Like, that's a substantial amount of time. Yeah. I agree. I'm glad the parks guy encouraged them to, because I don't think at that age it's easy to be like, let's call 911.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah.
The gate worker also alerts the other workers in the park of the missing person, and at 2 p.m., it seems the gate attendant is the one who calls the Ontario Provincial Police, or the OPP, and files a missing persons report for Christina. I couldn't find if her friends also called. It's possible they didn't have a cell phone. Who knows?
I was going to say, the fact that we haven't heard them say, like, and then they called Christina's phone, like, it makes me think they just didn't have a cell phone.
Yeah. Park officials get to work searching the main trails and the beaches for Christina, where JB and Eddie had already searched, but they have no luck. The OPP eventually arrives and takes the same steps that JB and Eddie had already taken, retracing the trails that they thought she would have taken. Investigators at this point also sit down to speak with Christina's friends to get their story, and they start with Eddie. Eddie told them the same story that he had told Faith and JB, that he said he couldn't remember whose idea it was to go for a jog, but that it was a mutual decision. They split up at the gate. Eddie told them he took the highway route, which loops around to the other campsite, while Christina decided to go the other direction and explore the trails in the park. Eddie tells investigators that he actually stopped halfway at a picnic area to rest, and while he was there, he carved the group's initials, FCJE, into a rock, and then decided to turn around and head back to the campsite. Eddie says he arrived back at the campsite after about an hour of running.
Okay.
He tells investigators that he wasn't surprised when he got back and Christina wasn't there yet, but after the other two friends woke up and she still hadn't returned, this is when they started to get worried. Officers took down Eddie's statement, but didn't really feel there was anything in the statement that was overly concerning. Faith and JB actually tell investigators the same story, and JB even says that he actually remembers waking up that morning and hearing Christina talk to Eddie about going for a run. So this kind of, like, corroborates Eddie's story that they
did. Like, his timeline and everything?
Yeah, that they did, in fact, like, mutually decide to go for this run and that he wasn't just, like, making it up. Police also start collecting photos from the group, including selfies from the night before of Faith and Christina at the campsite.
Somebody do have a cell phone.
Or a digital camera.
That's true. What year is this again?
2007.
Oh, it's very much still digital camera possible.
Oh, yeah. The little, like, pink Fuji film that we all had.
I still have mine.
Do you actually? That's amazing.
It's purple, and it has a selfie camera in the front of it, so you turn it on and an invisible screen appears.
Oh my god,
it's so amazing. Weird.
Well, in those digital camera days, like, you could see the photos in the little viewfinder, right? So yeah. It's very possible it was a digital camera.
Totally. Love that for them.
Yeah. So yeah, they start collecting these selfies. They have photos of the fire and the food from the night before and all that jazz. By 4 p.m. that day, authorities had still seen no sign of Christina, and so they officially decide at this point to call her mom in Toronto.
Good.
Elizabeth is not only shocked to find out that her daughter is missing, but she's also really confused because, like I said at the beginning of the episode,
she's supposed to be in Montreal.
Christina had told her that the group was going to Montreal. And Rainbow Falls, for those who don't know, is like 17 hours the other direction from Montreal. And so Montreal is like 6 hours from Toronto the other way.
Yeah. And to put in perspective, like, it takes about 2 days if you sleep at night to drive across Ontario. So saying 17 hours, people are like, what? That's so far. It's 100% far. Legitimate.
Yeah.
It is a full day plus some of driving.
Yeah, so it just didn't make sense to Christina's mom why they ended up there. And honestly, when I was 20, I feel like it's really easy to just, like, change your plans and forget to tell people.
Especially your mom.
Like, you're just like, oh, I'm going away for the weekend.
She's
going
to have so many questions.
Yeah, totally. You're just like, oh, I'll just do what I'm doing and then I'll tell you.
You're like, I'll just be back at the same time anyway and she'll be none the wiser.
Well, and if they didn't have cell phones, you know, it would have, I don't know if they did or not. There's really no mention of cell phones. So it makes me think that they didn't. But yeah, like, you know, like, stop at a payphone just to, I don't know. We've all been 20.
I just think 2007, I was 17. Sure, I had a cell phone, but I know a lot of my friends that didn't.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When investigators ask the group what they were doing in Rainbow Falls instead of Montreal, Eddie tells them that they couldn't stay in Montreal. So again, we're not really sure if it's like all the hotels were booked up. I saw one article that said that Montreal was going to be too expensive for them, which Katie has kind of said it's really expensive to stay there. So that makes sense. Yeah, it can
be for sure. So especially if you're booking last minute.
Yeah, so whatever the reason, Saturday morning they decide to ditch their plans and go somewhere else, and they all agreed that they wanted to go camping, and so he tells them that they typed in the word falls into Google and hit enter. Rainbow Falls was the third on that list when they Googled, and it's not really known as like a huge national tourist destination. It's really like a pitch a tent type of place, and so that's why they decided to go there.
Well, I mean, it's, you assume it's going to be less people, you can do what you want, you'll have more space, like, it just sounds like more fun.
The modern day version of, like, throwing a pin at a map.
Mm-hmm. Falls. Yeah. Search.
So, the way that Eddie tells the story, it did seem like it was kind of like a really last minute decision, so they just didn't tell their families. It's all good.
Again, I kind of get it, just like you do.
Elizabeth flies to Thunder Bay overnight and arrived the next day on Tuesday, August the 8th, while Christina's other family members, including her dad and uncle, start the drive out to start searching.
Okay.
The search was actually called off Monday night, the day that she went missing, because it was not safe for investigators to continue through the night, but they would begin Tuesday morning when the sun came back up.
Yeah, I think it's fairly common. We hear, like, we'll resume at daybreak. Mm-hmm. It's just the way it is.
Yeah. So Tuesday morning, the OPP brings out all of their resources, including an emergency response team. They bring out 3 K-9 units and a helicopter. The K-9 units go out first, and the hope here was that they would be able to, like, pick up a scent so that they could narrow down their search for her. Because at this point, I think that they think that she's lost. And so they want to figure out. I think
that's a fair assumption.
Yeah. They want to figure out, like, where to search, because, again, this is 1,400 acres. They're trying to nail down, like, a general search spot.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, however, the dogs don't pick up any scent on the trail or in the woods at all. The OPP at this point also begins conducting a criminal investigation alongside their search and rescue mission. They knew it, that if there was a chance that she wasn't in the park, and that would either mean that she ran away or that foul play could be involved.
Yeah, it sounds like she was pulled into a car and taken away, because how else is there no scent?
Right, and it runs along the highway, so it would have been really easy. Yeah, like you've emphasized
how close it is to the highway.
Yeah. The runaway theory is thrown out pretty quickly. Like, Christina had no reason to leave her life behind. She was with her friends. She had a lot of plans for the future. It just kind of, like, didn't make sense. So they're pretty convinced that she's either lost or injured. But they did consider the criminal aspect. However, it kind of appears that this was thrown out pretty quickly, because throughout most of the investigation, the OPP, like, continue to state that there's absolutely no sign of foul play. But if she was just pulled into a car, like, how would there be a sign of foul play?
These are the times where we say, like, there's no risk to the public, things like that. Like, just don't say things you can't back up.
Yeah, and I mean, the hard part about the criminal aspect was that it was really hard for them to come up with any leads that would support the theory that foul play was involved.
I would just prefer them say we're not ruling it out.
They kind of do, though. It seems like they rule it out, like, altogether, and they just kind of stop mentioning it.
Oh, God, why?
Yeah. Now, again, like I've mentioned a few times, this park does run along a major highway. And just up the road, more than 10,000 people had come to the area that weekend for a big car show. But by this point, all of them had already left.
Or so they say.
Like, everybody that was at the car show was assumed to have gone home at this point. Like, the car show was over and they wrapped it up.
I'm just saying, any of those people could have stuck around.
Yeah, and so they have a hard time even, like, they know, even if they put posters out and stuff, that like not everybody who was in the area is gonna see those posters.
Yeah.
It's important to note that JB and Eddie are never considered suspects in the foul play theory, and though many people suspect that her friends know what happened to her, her family, and the police don't believe that they were involved at all.
Hmm.
And I've actually seen theories online as well that, like, Christina was never even at the park, like, that she never even made it to Rainbow Falls, but we do have her signature at the gatehouse, which her mom very much believes is, like, her signature that signed that camping form. Like, it doesn't look forged to her. And we have photos.
Is there no camera at... I was going to say, isn't there a camera at the campsite? And does there potentially one where they sign in?
No, I don't think there was a security camera that I could find. But they have all these, like, photos from the...
Yeah, they have all these selfies of her...
Of the food and the fire group the night and before. The selfie. Like, and
she was clearly at the campground.
Yeah, and they have the signature, so like I believe that she was at the campground. I don't think that her friends were being like shady in that aspect. It's just a theory that I've seen floated around the internet. So
it's also a lot of work to explain a whole evening with somebody and a next morning with someone to have made it up and all have the same story.
Yeah,
I don't believe it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. So after canine units are unable to detect a scent, a helicopter is deployed as well as ATVs begin searching on the ground and marine units begin searching the lakes, rivers, and other bodies of water in and near the park. So we're surrounded by like quite a bit of water.
Okay.
They also search the waterfall where her friends thought Christina might have gone when her and Eddie split up. Officers on foot extended their search to a wider perimeter, and a team called a hasty team was deployed. A hasty team uses information that they're given about Christina, so like her physical abilities and her interests and things like that, and they combine it with their knowledge of the park's geography and send officers to like search those specific areas.
That's super cool.
Very interesting. I've actually never heard of that before.
Me neither, but I like the idea.
Yeah, it's a cool way to try and, like, it's almost like profiling.
Yeah, it's like profiling for a missing person.
Yeah, it's cool. It's very interesting. Even after all of this, there's absolutely no sign of Christina found. Like, no tracks, no pieces of clothing, absolutely no evidence that she had been on any of the trails. Her dad and other family members begin to arrive a few days into the search. However, they're not allowed to join in right away to the official search as there was a worry that they could get hurt, which is what they thought might have happened to Christina. And so they don't allow civilians to help in the search right away.
Okay.
Officers also canvassed all the nearby towns and posted missing person posters in the hopes that somebody might have seen something. They reach out to the public at this point to ask for assistance as well, and they release information about Christina stating that she is of Filipino-Canadian descent, 20 years old, she had black hair and brown eyes, and she was last seen wearing a blue navy hoodie, a maroon purple shirt, black running pants, and black and white running shoes with Velcro straps. Shortly after releasing Christina's information to the public, a man named Paul Gauthier, who was staying at the smaller campsite, so at the Rossport campground on the other side, calls investigators and states that at 9 a.m. on the morning Christina disappeared, he was drinking his coffee outside his RV and says he noticed a young Asian woman walking down the road from the direction of the highway. He said she was walking normally and... I mean, people walk by your campsite all the time, so I don't think this guy, like, stared at her very long or, like, thought too much of it.
No, you look up to make sure it's not someone coming into your campsite to talk to you, and then when you see it's not, you just go back to what you're doing.
Yeah, but, like, ordinarily you're not, like, you know, checking them out and checking out what they're wearing and really doing, like, a deep look.
Yeah.
I don't know, just kind of, like, glance up and, like, oh, there's a person.
Yeah,
and
totally.
Go back about your business. So, of course, like, he doesn't think much of this. She walks out of sight, and he forgot about it until he heard the description of the missing woman.
Hmm.
This man believed that, based on the description of her clothing, that this could have been Christina. This seemed odd to investigators because this woman was walking from the highway and Christina was not supposed to have gone that direction at all. So either she did make it up to the highway and down into the other campsite, or the man didn't see Christina. He just saw somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Police do not receive any other sightings of her in the area besides this one, and so they don't believe that the person that Paul saw was Christina, as they were unable to find any other evidence or, like, corroboration that she was there.
Okay.
So... good for him. Sure. See something, say something. But the police don't believe this is Christina, just based on the fact that, like, she wasn't supposed to have gone that direction, and nobody else in that campground, like, claims to have seen her.
Well, and the fact that there could have been another Asian woman in either of those campgrounds is highly plausible. So
yeah,
it's not like they could say, like, well, the odds of another Asian woman there are so low that it had to be Christina.
Yeah.
No, it's highly plausible, especially because he's in a completely different campground.
Yeah. And again, like, he just kind of glanced at her, so. About 1 week into the search for Christina, searchers make what they were hopeful would be an important discovery. The team was searching around a 35-foot-deep swimming hole close to the waterfall that they thought she might have gone to, and they come across a pair of socks near the riverbank. Nearby the socks, they also see a footprint, which is, like, described in the research as more of a shoe print, not a footprint. This area had been searched before, but they hadn't been searching this close to the water, as they were focusing on the trails. So they were hopeful that it would be connected to her, but the socks were too big to be her size. The shoe print did look to be her size. There's no visible, like, grooves or anything, so it's hard to tell if it was hers or not, but they do make, like, a plaster cast of it, and they send the sock off for DNA testing.
Yeah, why not?
On Friday, August the 10th, the OPP swapped the helicopter that they were using for one with thermal heat detection, but it does not detect anything through the thick bush.
Hmm.
And also, like, it's important to note that this forested area was so thick that, I mean, A, the thermal heat detection helicopter can't even detect anything.
Yeah.
And the airplane above couldn't even see officers that were, like, standing right below them. Like, they were kind of testing to see if, like, if we stand here, can you see us? And they couldn't through the trees.
Well, because, yeah, if you can see even anything thermal, it at least gives you an indicator that there's something there, so you can at least know to look. But if you're not seeing anything,
no.
Ouch.
Yeah. For the first 15 days of searching for Christina, searchers had focused on covering the largest area possible in the shortest amount of time. Police in total covered an 8 kilometer radius from the point where Christina had last been seen. Despite being trained for these types of situations as well, like, the OPP was even struggling during the search due to the terrain off the trails. Two of their officers...
It's very much a search and rescue type mission rather than... Like, it almost feels like you need people who are, like, bushwhacking trained.
They did.
As opposed to, like, just police trained.
They had search and rescue teams, though, as well.
No, I know, but I'm just saying, like, they seem like the only ones really qualified for this terrain.
Yeah. But, like, two of their officers had gone injured and were sent to the hospital, like, searching through off the trails. This is how, like, rough the forest area is off the trails.
Oh,
and
God.
A search dog even got lost in the bush.
Was he found?
We don't know. I know. I want to believe that they found the dog, yes, but I couldn't find an answer to that either.
Oh, no. If anybody knows, I would just like that answer. Because, again, I'm the person that cries when something happens to a dog in a movie. So if you know what happened to that search dog, I would also like an update on that.
Crime Junkie didn't know either.
Ugh.
I know. I want to assume yes, but...
I'm going to assume yes as well.
Yeah. The aerial searches, like I said, were also difficult because the area was, like, so dense that, like, helicopters couldn't even see officers on the ground when they were flying over their direct location. And marine units start, they're continuing their search underwater and they start using sonar equipment in deeper areas.
Holy.
Yeah, they brought out all the stops for this search.
I'm impressed that they're going above and beyond so quickly.
Yeah.
And pulling out all these resources.
A couple weeks into the search, this is when they allow civilians to start helping. More than 100 civilians were enlisted to help with the search, including Christina's friends and family. They covered a 5-mile radius from the campsite, but they still came up with nothing. On August 21st, 2007, which is 15 days after Christina was last seen, the OPP announced that they are changing their approach to the search. They announced that they are now looking for an unresponsive person.
So it's a recovery mission as opposed to a rescue.
Correct. They have not seen any signs of anyone active in the bush, and so they feel at this point that if Christina was out there, she more than likely has either not survived.
Or she's unconscious somewhere this entire time.
Correct.
Okay. But yes, you can tell that they are leaning to the direction of there's no signs of life. We're leaving it at that.
Yeah. At this point, they had combed through all 1,400 acres of the park, and there had not been one solid piece of evidence to show that she was out there. The DNA test for the socks eventually come back as well and are not a match to Christina.
Not surprised, but still worth looking.
Yeah. The crew of 20 to 25 officers changes their tactic, beginning a more detailed grid-style ground search of the park, starting from the point where Christina was last seen. They also start exploring every option available to them, such as tracking bird activity and searching areas with higher level of scavengers or like vultures.
Which we've seen before. We've heard of them looking for any type of vulture, eagle, large birds that are carnivores, because this will indicate, normally this would mean that something what we would call large game, like a moose or a deer, has died in the woods. Mm-hmm. In this case, unfortunately, those birds may be searching for just what they see as flesh. Unfortunately, it may be a human body.
Yeah. OPP Sergeant Deb Tully told CBC News, quote, "Certainly we have significant concern for the survivability of Christina in this situation. There's been no sign of her active movement through the bush, and that means the searchers are now turning toward the possibility that we're dealing with somebody who's non-responsive, so that could potentially include someone who has passed away." Mm-hmm. They also announced that aviation searches would be called off as they were doing a search that was more detailed and close to the ground, and that canine units would not be used again unless there was a point of interest or they felt that they were required. They also explore the possibility that she may have been attacked by a wild animal, like a bear. They actually fly in a bear expert.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Well, okay, so they fly in this bear expert from the Ministry of Natural Resources who basically immediately rules out the wild animal theory for lack of evidence. His name is Dr. Stephen Herrero, and he is a bear expert and the author of the book Bear Attacks, Their Causes and Avoidance. And he explained that...
Practical.
Quote, "There are roughly 900,000 black bears in North America, and since the year 2000, there have been an average of only 2 black bear fatalities a year. Also, if she was attacked on the trail by a bear or even like a pack of wolves, there should have been blood or scraps of clothing that would have been found." Dogs
should have been able to smell that out because there would have been like biological DNA throughout the brush.
Yeah, and nothing of the sort was found. So they kind of immediately rule out the wild animal theory.
And, like, it would have been, like, in a copious amount because it wouldn't have been a human doing it. Like, so I think that the dogs would have just, like, immediately gone to it.
Yeah, I agree. Despite all the efforts in this case, nothing happens and the search begins to slow down. On August the 23rd, 2007, police call off the search for Christina. Sergeant Deb Tully said the OPP made their decision after finding no evidence of anyone moving through the bush where Christina was last seen jogging on August 6th. And she said, quote, "At this time, we're suspending the active search. If more information comes to light, then we'll be following those leads, whether it's by way of an investigation or search."
I mean, I would hope so.
Yeah. The OPP had hoped to resume their search for Christina in November of that year, but this had to be canceled because of bad weather. 7 members of the Provincial Emergency Response Team were expected in the Schreiber area to start looking for Christina. And Sergeant Tully said, quote, "In the case of the Kaleika search, we were going to be utilizing them to do some high-risk rappelling style of search." So this is like a high angle rope search and rescue. And they have like the PERT team have a number of officers who are trained to a higher degree in that style of search. So that would be them like actually scaling up with like ropes and doing like high angle searching.
Wow. Okay.
Tully said that the PERT members would have spent about 5 days checking areas that were too dangerous to access during the initial search. And she said officers planned to look along steep cliffs, which would be very hazardous if they're covered in snow or ice. So they kind of had to wait because of the weather.
I guess that makes sense if they're doing like high vantage points.
Yeah. The OPP continued to say that it was an open missing person investigation, but was not considered a criminal investigation because no evidence had been found to suggest foul play.
Yeah, it sounds like she was just plucked from this park.
I know, and they're not
investigating. Why are we still focusing on this park?
Yeah, to me, like the whole time I was researching this, I was like, maybe it's just because I've been doing this show for too long, but this sounds to me like somebody grabbed her and threw her in a car and took off on the highway.
Yeah, like, I would be curious to know, like, can the dogs track her scent all the way to where the two of them split and took different routes? Like, right. Did it... Because then it would seem like, okay, as soon as they split, maybe someone was following her and grabbed her.
Mm-hmm.
Or something, you know? Like, there's just... I have so many more questions.
Or maybe she went for a 30-minute walk and then walked back and somebody grabbed her. I mean, Eddie was running for a whole hour. Like,
yeah.
An hour to me is a long time if you're like, you know, walk along a trail and you see a waterfall and then you're like, yeah, okay, cool. And then you decide to walk back. Like, it's very possible that she could have walked back before him.
Oh, I wholeheartedly believe that she would have been back before but was picked up somewhere.
And this is so early in the morning. Like, most people at the campground were probably sleeping. It was probably a dead zone.
Yeah.
Anyway.
She could have just been pulled into someone's camper she was walking by.
Yep.
They could have packed up and left.
I agree that the criminal investigation should have been looked at more. And, of course, it's hard if there's no leads or anything like that. But to rule it out entirely when you've done extensive searches, like, with sonar equipment, with heat thermal detection, with this, that, and the other, and you find nothing. They're telling the
public there's nothing at that park.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so look elsewhere.
Yeah, I agree.
Stop looking at the park.
After the search for Christina was called off, her mother, Elizabeth, raised funds for multiple private searches. Over the winter months, Christina's family and friends were able to raise $48,000 for a private search of the park that was set to begin on June the 13th, 2008.
That's impressive.
Yeah, a lot of money.
Yeah.
Dog trainer Doug Tieft from Dartmouth, Nova Scotia, volunteered to manage the private search with roughly 30 experienced volunteers and up to 11 search dogs that were trained for wilderness and cadaver searches.
Okay.
The money raised by Christina's family was said to go to transportation, insurance, food, and equipment costs. The initial private search in June of 2008 did not yield any sign of Christina.
I wonder how much that cost. Did you say? Did I miss it?
Well, they raised $48,000, but no, I don't know how much it cost, but the dog trainer himself said that, like, these kind of searches do cost a lot of money.
Yeah. I was just curious how much they would have had left to do some other type of approach.
Yeah. They do a couple more, and we'll kind of get into that in a minute. Christina's mother, Elizabeth, believes that her daughter was abducted or taken from the park. However, the OPP continue to insist that foul play is not suspected in Christina's disappearance. Her friends feel the same way, that she, like, they're basically like she had to have been taken.
Yeah, like, I don't know how they can't also assume that.
Yeah. And in 2008, Eddie said that the OPP had not spoken to him or his friends since they returned to Toronto 2 weeks after Christina disappeared. Eddie says that his biggest regret is that he left Christina alone in the early morning to jog where they don't know the area well.
He can't do that to himself.
He has a lot of guilt.
You think that a campground's a pretty safe place. There's lots of eyes, there's lots of people watching, there's people around. And the fact that it was so early and quiet, and if someone grabbed her and no one heard a thing, is shocking.
I know. An anniversary mass was held for Christina 1 year after she went missing on August the 6th, 2008. More than 70 people attended the mass, including several of the children Christina taught at the daycare. Many of them sang and danced to praise and worship music.
Oh, yeah, because she was really into the arts, wasn't she?
She was very into the arts and with her church and her faith. Like, she was very much involved in the Catholic community. You know, she taught at a Catholic daycare. She was in the Youth for Christ group and was a youth leader. And she was, like, very, very involved in this community. Over the next few years, the OPP conducted more searches, and Christina's family funded 6 private searches.
Holy shit.
Cadaver dogs and high-angle climbers were brought in to search the places that may have been missed initially, but they still did not find any concrete evidence of where Christina might have ended up in the park.
No idea.
None. In the fall of 2009... Okay. A Minnesota-based search and rescue team made a final attempt to find Christina. They focused on the White Sand River, where they say cadaver dogs had potentially picked up a scent in the fall of 2008, but nothing came of this search either. In October of 2010, human remains were found in an area near Rainbow Falls. However, they were not identified as Christina's.
Oh. I'm just getting frustrated with, like, how many searches are happening for nothing to come up. Like, nothing.
Like, if she was there, you would have found a piece of clothing. You would have found something.
Yeah, I agree. Without a doubt. Yeah. And there's just nothing to go on. I just don't.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I'm more frustrated that resources are being allocated to these searches that are coming up with nothing, or if the fact that they just keep searching.
Yeah, and saying that foul play is not involved.
Yeah, this one's really frustrating.
Yeah. Retired OPP officer Sergeant Don Webster shared a new update in a September 2021 interview. He stated that some information regarding the case had not been made public yet and is part of an active investigation. So it's possible that they know some stuff that they're not releasing, but it just feels like at this point, why wouldn't you have released that information? Because it's been so long.
Yeah.
Like, I get hold back information for a certain amount of time, and you're never going to reveal everything, but you have
to. But I was just watching a documentary, and the family even says, like, there's a certain amount of time that passes, and you have to start letting little bits of their hold back evidence go
100%.
If there's no movement.
100%.
So that is infuriating. Like, you have something and you won't, like, work with what you don't know instead of what you do know. Like, you've kind of ruled out the park, so can we look elsewhere?
Yeah. I agree.
Ugh, it's infuriating.
In June of 2023, the OPP issue a new plea to the public in the disappearance, hoping that people who were heading out to camp that summer would keep their eyes out for anything to do with Christina. At the time Christina vanished, cops obviously didn't believe foul play was involved, but it seems that they appear less sure today. Like, it seems like they're kind of entertaining.
Well, they have no information.
The theory a little bit more, but yeah, again, they just, like, don't have anything to go on because they didn't really do a full criminal investigation at the time. Investigators ask anyone in the area of Rainbow Falls to report any sign of human remains or articles of clothing, especially pieces of clothing that might match the description of what Christina was wearing. There is a $50,000 reward offered by the government of the province of Ontario for any information that might lead to Christina's whereabouts. She's described as 5'2", weighing 125 to 130 pounds. She is of Asian descent with black shoulder-length hair and brown eyes. And at the time of her disappearance, she was wearing a navy blue hoodie, a maroon shirt, black pants, and black and white runners. Anyone with information can contact the director of the criminal investigation branch at the OPP at 1-888-310-1122 or Crime Stoppers to remain anonymous at 1-800-222-8477. If you, you can also submit your tip online at OntarioCrimeStoppers.ca. So yeah, that's pretty much it for the Christina Kaleika disappearance. Her aunt was quoted in a news article of like the misadventure kind of theory saying, quote, "Christina is a responsible person. She's close to her family, close to her friends. Just having visited Rainbow Falls myself, I know she simply did not get lost."
I agree with her aunt. She didn't just get lost. I think every indicator from that after the, like the preliminary search would show that. Yeah. I think once the dogs lost her track and then search and rescue went in and didn't see her still.
Yeah.
We should have pivoted.
And her family also does describe her as like very trusting. And so they worry that she may have trusted the wrong person, which would support the theory that like she just kind of got into somebody's car. Again, there was a lot of people in the area. This was a long weekend. She went missing on the Monday of the long weekend. And there were a lot of people in the area because there was, like, the annual drag fest, which, like, this big car show thing in Terrace Bay, which was nearby. Sorry, Terrace Bay. So, yeah. Like we said earlier, somebody just, like, taking her in a car and onto the highway could explain why there was no scent whatsoever, unless the dogs were just not working that day. I don't know.
No, I honestly think that maybe someone pulled up beside her and said, like, can you help me with something, mm-hmm. considering she was so trusting.
Yeah.
And grabbed her or, you know, like, pushed her into the car kind of thing.
Yeah. It's just like the lost theory made sense until you did like 12 searches using the most insane, you know what I mean? Like the most crews, the most technology. You're doing sonar, you're doing infrared cameras, you're using GPS mapping. Like the most cutting edge technology at the time was used in the search and you found absolutely nothing. There was like 100 police officers searching. Like,
not even something to give you an inkling that you're moving in the right direction, and you still kept going in that direction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, but that's infuriating. That's really, like, all I have for this case. Of course, there's, like, some theories. Did she start a new life? I don't think so.
No.
She had plans. Did she just,
like, and she was on a highly enjoyable trip. What she was on a family camping trip. She was on a family, or camping trip with her friends.
Yeah. Yeah. And then, the only thing we really have left is foul play. I don't think her friends were involved in this at all. I truly don't believe that, just based on what I've read and what I've seen. Yes, it took them, like, 7.5 hours to report her missing, but during that time, they were, like, frantically searching for her, and like we said, like, they're young. You don't want to call the police on your friend right away.
No, and I don't think at that age I would have just been, like, confident enough to even call the police to report her missing.
Yeah.
Whether I believed she was or not, I don't think that I would have had the confidence.
Yeah. And nobody in their friend group has ever been named a suspect in Christina's disappearance. Like, the police don't believe that they were involved at all. Which, yeah, kind of just leaves us with the opportunistic foul play theory.
Or just like a big whodunit.
It is. But yeah. So. I'll list the numbers, of course, in the episode description. But again, if you have information about this case, please contact the director of the criminal investigation branch at the OPP at 1-888 310-1122 or Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-8477 or OntarioCrimeStoppers.ca. And that is the disappearance of Christina Kaleka.
That's shocking and kind of infuriating.
It's wild. It's wild how, like, in-depth the search was to come up with absolutely nothing and then still float the theory that she just disappeared in the park.
I agree.
Yeah.
I don't think they have any leg to stand on with it.
Not after that many searches. From, like, highly trained people. And again, people had gone missing and been found in this park before.
Well, yeah, and like you said, like, it's just not the first time it's happened.
And look, if you're walking trails and you, like, accidentally take a wrong turn, you're not going to keep walking. You're going to, like, turn around and go back to the trail. So how far off the beaten path could she have possibly been?
Like, I don't know.
Who goes for a walk and then, like, a casual stroll to the beach and then accidentally takes a wrong turn off the trail and keeps, like, bushwhacking? You wouldn't have been that far off the path if you did.
She's not dressed accordingly for something like that anyway.
No. It just doesn't even make sense. I don't even do that on horseback.
No. Why would you? It's so risky.
Yeah. So anyways, thank you for being here. Again, if you would love to follow us on social media, we're on Instagram and Facebook at Podcast by Proxy. If there's a case that you would like us to cover, you can send it to podcastbyproxy@gmail.com or use the case suggestion button in our link in our bio on Instagram.
There's and Google. We will start checking that, I promise.
I'm going to say there's a Google Doc there and I'm going to check it now. And please, if you enjoy the show and you have not done so already, leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple. And you can actually rate the show on Spotify as well, which is super helpful for us getting new listeners and getting that feedback.
Yeah, it's literally the only way it happens, really, in theory, is word of mouth.
Yeah.
We can't thank you guys enough for what you do for us and the likes, the shares. All the love we see.
Yeah, I've seen actually a lot of new listeners lately saying that they, like, recently found our show and they love it so much. So thank you so much. And if you have friends that you think would like it, please share with them. Please don't forget to leave us that 5-star.
Thank you for binging.
Thank you for
binging. We don't know how you do it. We could not listen to our own voices that much, but we love that you love to do it. Thank you.
And we will see you next week.
Bye.
Bye. I'll call you soon.
Okay.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye. How do I stop this shit?
I'll stop it.
Okay.